So let me start off. Let's you know, we've been kind of in a serious place here for a few things. Let me lighten the mood by telling you the time that I got my appendix taken out. True story. So I was a few years ago. I was having these stomach pains, right? But I didn't really know what was going on. I'd had some like digestive issues for a while, so I thought maybe I'd like so I did what anyone would do whenever you have like that was weird. You Google it, right? Which has never helped anyone. Can we be honest about that? Like, it's like you might have a cold or you're dying in 5 seconds. Like, it's like one of those two. And so I like, yeah, you know, I'm looking it up and it's like, you might have a gluten allergy. I'm like, ah, that's probably what it is. So I started trying to like clear all that stuff out. So I was hanging out with a friend of mine in San Diego and we were eating. And as we're eating, I was like, man, that really hurts. And he's like, what's wrong? And I told him a little bit about it. It's like, I have a gluten allergy. He's like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's not what that is. It's like, you need to go to the doctor. And so... I was like, maybe that's not a bad idea. That and like the fevers that I occasionally had maybe would have tipped me off. And so I know I'm in the future as well. And so I went to the doctor. He's like, yeah, it's not gluten. I promise you that. It's like what happened is your appendix actually had a small rupture a long time ago and has been slowly leaking. Right. And so he's like, but here's the deal. Your body like saw that there was an infection, and so it created an abscess, and it walled off the infection. I was like, that's awesome. I was like, my immune system is awesome. Well done, body. He's like, well, yeah. He's like, okay, yeah, sure. He's like, that's awesome, but here's the problem. It's like that infection. It's like, yeah, your body managed to wall off the infection, and that's great, but that infection's still there. And it's growing, and eventually that abscess isn't going to be able to hold that. And when the abscess breaks, it's like, that will be very bad for you. And he's like, so what do we do? And so I ended up going on like 2 or 3 months of antibiotics to get the infection down. Abscess is like a really thick scar tissue, apparently. I don't know. And so he's like, we have to like get that to soften up, and then we can go in and we pulled it out. And so if you're looking at me and being like, he is light and spry, it's because I don't have an appendix, so I'm able to move around quicker than the rest of you. Not true. It's not medically accurate. But I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that whole thing of like how there's this infection in my body and how like it had managed to get walled off. And because it was walled off, the infection was able to sort of be hidden, or the effects of it were able to sort of be shoved over to this one side of my body. It's like, but you can't have an infection inside of you for long before it's eventually going to take over. And when it does, it's going to wreck everything. And I mentioned that tonight because this is what we try to do spiritually all the time. Like, we have stuff in our life, and we know the stuff isn't good. We know that these are things that are harmful to us. We know this is behavior that wouldn't be considered healthy behavior. And yet we think it's not really that big of a deal. It's like, yeah, sure, maybe this is like a spiritual infection that's bad for me, but I can sort of wall it off to this one area of my life, and it will stay there. This is the what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas syndrome. And that is not how life works. You can't wall off something that is damaging to your life like that, in the same way that you can't sort of, that my body couldn't wall off an infection without it eventually becoming this huge life-wrecking problem. In the same way, it's like whenever we allow there to be these spiritual infection points inside of us, and we don't deal with them, but we just sort of shove them down, we push them away, we minimize them so that no one can see them, it grows and grows and eventually becomes something that if not treated, will end up wrecking our entire life. So when you think about it, think about materialism, right? Materialism, initially, it doesn't seem like necessarily that big of a deal. It's just someone who's maybe just a tiny bit preoccupied with the way they look, right? Or just you maybe spend a little bit more on that shirt than you needed to, or that car, or whatever, but it's not that big of a deal. It's manageable. It will stay in its corner. And yet when you look at what happens with someone who never really deals with the problem of materialism, you start needing more and more and more to be content. And then you start like making pretty unwise financial decisions to get that stuff, or you become so cutthroat on needing to get more money that you'll do whatever it takes to get ahead. And then you start thinking less of people who don't have the same cool stuff or don't look the part, don't have that image that you have. And what started as this maybe smaller infection spiritually off to the side has grown into something that is just, it's a disease that's infecting everything. So insecurity, you know, insecurity where we feel less than the people around us. We feel embarrassed or ashamed. But we think like, well, first of all, that's something that everyone kind of deals with, right? And yeah, I spend a lot of time worrying about what other people think, but I'm just going to sort of shove that down off to the side. But when we don't deal with the spiritual infection of insecurity, we start changing who we are to get other people's approval. We lose ourselves in relationships. We become resentful of people for putting pressure on us. We're unable to simply relax and enjoy intimacy. And this small spiritual infection starts becoming this giant life-changing problem. There's some of you who are here tonight who struggle with anxiety, and you just think, like, I can keep it under control. If I just sort of try harder to have control of my life, then it will be okay. But you're sort of pushing down the stress and anxiety into this little ball inside of you. And it's, like, actually becoming physically painful for you. It's like you're walking around carrying the pain of your stress that's just sort of been shoved inside to the point where, for some of you, it's actually causing you physical problems. I think there's nowhere that this is more obviously true to me than with lust. Like, this is something our culture has really decided, like, that when it comes to some things, like, lust is not that big of a deal. It's natural. This is, like, to have a sex drive is normal, and that part's true. But then it's, like, and to express that, especially through things like pornography, that's not a big deal. That's just sort of, like, a part of life. But you can't get away with the spiritual disease of separating the identity of someone from their body, treating that body as something that exists to satisfy you, and then to get away with that unscathed. Like, what we're finding out is that, like, people, that the more that pornography kind of gets its way into relationships, into people, that it actually physiologically rewires the way that you think about the opposite sex. We can't wall off spiritual infections in our life. They don't stay where they're supposed to be. And here's the deal. I was thinking about this tonight, and for some of you here, you already are with me, and you're like, I get it. Yeah, sure. But for some of you here tonight, you're still, and I know I'm still fairly young in the scheme of things, I get that, but, like, especially when you're in your 20s, it's a little bit harder to see some of this stuff catching up to you. It's a little bit harder to be like, no, I've got this under control, it's manageable, and, like, at that point in time, it really seems like it can be. But how many more stories do we need? How many more warning stories do we need of people out there, famous people, who have all of a sudden crashed and burned horribly? People where we say, that person would never do that. I can't believe that happened to that person. I can't believe that person did that. What went wrong? What happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. There was a spiritual infection in that person's life, and they thought they could manage it, and so they shoved it into a corner, but it grew, and it grew, and it grew, and the cover-up became more and more, and when it exploded, it was terrible. It's not like people think when they get married, you know, it's like, I'm really looking forward to the day where I can cheat on my husband or my wife. That's not something people are thinking on their wedding day. What happens? A spiritual infection of dissatisfaction, of a lack of communication, gets into that relationship and spreads. With addictions, with the financial crisis that happened a few years ago. What is all this stuff? It's spiritual infections that started somewhere small and grew into epidemics that created havoc and chaos on the lives of people around them. I had a friend who was a pastor at my old church, and we worked on the same team for a while, and he went to work at one of the regional campuses for this church, and while he was there, he ended up having an affair with the worship leader at that campus. And a friend of mine was talking to this guy, and he asked him, he's like, well, when did it start? And he's like, it started when I hugged her 1 second longer than I knew I should have. And in that moment, a spiritual infection of his intent bent this way, and rather than owning up to it, he covered it up until it grew and became something horrible. And if you're here tonight and you're checking out this whole Christianity thing, I know there's some of you who are here tonight that you're not bought into this whole Jesus, God, religion thing. You're figuring it out. And I want to let you know, this is one of the basic principles of Christianity is this, is that every single person in this world has a spiritual infection inside of them that if not treated is going to eventually consume who they are. And so if you've ever heard the word sin, that's what we're talking about. Sin is a spiritual infection that erodes away at the identity of who someone is. And so for any of us who are here tonight, who are followers of Jesus, like we should be the first people to recognize that like this is something that could happen to us. This is something that could happen to me. This is something that could happen to you. We are the first people to say, but for the grace of God, there go I. Because we all know that there's a spiritual infection point inside of us that if not dealt with, could sabotage everything. So I want to create some space right now. I want to ask you a question. Where's that spiritual infection inside of you? That area that's small, or maybe it's not so small, that area that you keep telling yourself, I can control this, I can minimize it, I can keep this over here. Where is that area where there's a spiritual infection point and you feel the effects of it, but you continue to try to wall it off? Tonight, we're going to look at the example of someone that let a spiritual infection in their life linger and it destroyed them. But we're not going to look at the story, and it's not a story that's hopeless. It's a story about, so what do we learn from that? And even in this person, how can we learn from their example of how they then responded when their life sort of hit bottom? And tonight, here's what I'm going to ask. The question we're going to look at tonight is this, is like, is it possible for us not to get to that point in the first place? What does it look for us not to get to the point where there's this spiritual infection that's just ruined everything? How do we get to the point where before things get bad, we're able to deal with that and allow it to be healed? Is that possible? And if so, how? Tonight, the story that we're going to look at involves a guy named David. For those of you who have been with us in the story, David is the king of Israel. Israel is God's chosen people. A long time before this, God goes to a guy named Abraham. He says, through you, I'm going to bring healing and hope and redemption to the entire world. Israel is that promise to where we're at in the story so far. King David, this guy has been, he's the hero up to now in the story. Last week we talked about Goliath. This guy is a giant slayer. This guy is a hero of the faith. This guy up to this point in the story has been one of these shining examples of like, here's what it looks like to be a good follower of God. And yet in our story tonight, he's going to turn a corner. And I thought tonight we'd do something a little bit differently. We're going to read a longer passage from the story tonight. And I actually, I just want us, rather than us actually looking at a screen, I just want us to hear it and imagine it as it's happening and just let it sort of soak in. And so I actually asked my friend Deanna to read this. So Deanna.
In the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. One evening, David got up from his bed and walked around the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful, and David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, "She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite." Then David sent messengers to get her. She came to him, and he slept with her. Now she was purifying herself from her monthly uncleanliness. Then she went back home. The woman conceived and sent word to David saying, "I am pregnant." So David sent this word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent him to David. When Uriah came to him, David asked him how Joab was, how the soldiers were, and how the war was going. Then David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." So Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. But Uriah slept at the entrance to the palace with all his master's servants and did not go down to his house. David was told Uriah did not go home. So he asked Uriah, "Haven't you just come from a military campaign? Why didn't you go home?" Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my commander Joab and my lord's men are camped in the open country. how could I go to my house and eat and drink and make love to my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing. Then David said to him, stay here one more day, and tomorrow I will send you back. So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. At David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among his master's servants. He did not go home. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In the note, he wrote, put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest. Then withdraw from him so he will be struck down and die. So while Joab and had the city under siege, he put Uriah at a place where he knew the strongest defenders were. When the men of the city came out and fought against Joab, some of the men in David's army fell. Moreover, Uriah the Hittite died.
How messed up is that story? Right? I mean, this is like some soap opera, Game of Thrones, devious sort of stuff that we're dealing with here. I mean, it's like, this is in the Bible. I mean, it's so many points where this story goes wrong. So what do we learn from this? The first thing I want us to look at, and this will be a point that we'll have up on the screen, is this, that the first thing we learn in this is that if we want to guard against spiritual infection, we have to remain in the joy of our identity. We have to remain in the joy of our identity. That might feel like a weird place to start in breaking down the story. Let me explain what I mean by that. The story goes out of its way. At the beginning of that passage we just read, the author of it goes out of his way to make something clear that David could be, arguably should be, out at battle going to war, and instead he's at home. And you're like, well, maybe he had important kingly stuff to do. You know, he had like a lot of like throne stuff that needed to get done, so he's just going to go hang out there. But then the author is like, no, no, no. So while David was waking up from his nap he was having one day, you're like, ah, all right. David, in the way the story is written, we get the picture that David is being very passive in what's happening here. If there's one thing that David should be about, being the king of Israel, he should have plenty of things to do. I'm guessing that's a job where there's always something next that could be getting done. And yet, the author goes out of his way in the story to say, as David's waking up from his nap that he was taking, what's going on here? David has lost the joy of what God's called him to be about. Like, being the king isn't the worst job. There are worse things. Like, I'm sure it's not all like roses and sunshine all the time, but it's like you get to be king. I'm sure you could find some sort of pleasure in that. And when you think about it, I mean, that's kind of the same thing with us, right? I mean, I know that some of our lives all look different, but like we live in Southern California. That's not the worst thing. It could be worse, like North Dakota or something. Sorry if you're from North Dakota, but you know I'm right. It's like we live in a really nice area by the spectrum of the world and how like money, poverty, all of that works. We're doing pretty well. Life is not that bad for us. And yet, much like David, what we see is that there's an apathy that it's really easy to fall into, right? For a lot of us, if you're like me, it's really easy to sort of get into this rut where every single day is sort of the same old thing, where there's not a lot of new stuff that's happening, where you start sort of taking for granted the things that you do have in life. You lose the joy of what God's called you to do. Because here's the deal. If you're here tonight and you're a follower of Jesus, that means that you've been given gifts and talents and abilities. You've been given a calling. You've been given passions. You've been given relationships to invest it in. You've been given a world full of good stuff. And God being like, I want you to go enjoy this with me. Bring me with you as you go and learn how to enjoy this world that's out there. To follow God is not to like this path of like avoiding things that are pleasant. To follow God is to step into the full identity of who God's called us to be. And yet in David's case, that's not enough. He gets bored, he gets restless, he gets apathetic, and so he finds himself this one day standing on top of a roof, because what else do you do, I guess, when you're not doing anything? And he looks over and he sees a woman bathing. And my suggestion is this, is that before we get to the point of temptation, before we get to the point of how do we deal with that spiritual infection when we feel the call of it, when we feel the tug of it, before we get to that, what I want to suggest is this. The number one best way to fight off spiritual infection in your life is to stay, to remain, to fight, to be in the joy of who God has called you to be in the first place. Let me explain that a little bit more. I grew up in a really religious setting, environment, and it was one of those cultures that tended to focus a lot on rules. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of rules, too. And so I became very aware at an early age that there was a spiritual infection problem inside of me. That is not news to me. I have known that, been told that basically all my life. And so what I thought I was supposed to do was to try really hard not to want the things that this broken part inside of me wanted. If you're out there and you've tried that, how does that work out? It's terrible. It's like you want it more. There's nothing that makes you want something more than someone telling you not to do it, right? You're like, well, then I'm absolutely going to do it. And here's what I think now. Here's the learning that I've had now, is that the best way for me to steer away from the spiritual infection inside of me is to live in the spiritual fulfillment of what God's called me to do and be. So I've talked before about how in my life, lust has been a constant problem in my life, and it's gotten better, and God has steered me into a lot of freedom in that area. That's always going to be a point where I'm always going to have to be careful. But here's what I've changed in terms of strategy on that. It used to be, God, help me not to do all the bad things. You know what it is now? God, would you give me a love and a longing and a passion for my wife that would be so real and true and authentic that it would make everything else seem like a cheap imitation? Because that's what it is, right? That's what all that lust stuff is. It's a cheap imitation of intimacy that requires nothing out of you but doesn't give you back much in return and leaves you worse off for it. And real intimacy is much harder. And it's not easy. But in the long run, it's so much better. See, in every area of spiritual infection, all we're really looking at is a cheap imitation of something that God intends to give you in a better way. You may have heard this before, but whenever someone's being trained how to spot a counterfeit bill, I don't even know if people bother making counterfeit 20s. Maybe they do. That's all I got. I live in LA. This is as good as it gets. Whenever they're teaching someone how to spot a counterfeit bill, they don't train them to look at, they don't like show them all of the counterfeit bills. There'd be way too many permutations of that. It wouldn't work that way. So instead, they give them the real thing and they say, you are going to study the real thing so much that you are going to be able to spot anything that's different from what the real bill is. And in the same way, every temptation point, every sin, all sin is a twisted version of something that God has intended for good that's gotten twisted to something that seems desirable but is ultimately rotten and will leave you worse off than you were before. In his book, The Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis, he makes up sort of this idea that there's these two demons. There's like an elder demon and sort of this underling demon, and the elder demon's giving advice, and he says, we haven't actually been able to create any sort of new pleasure. All of it comes from God. All we can do is sort of twist it to get people to want it in a way that's harmful to them. And so when I say remain in the joy of your identity, what I mean is, can you spot the counterfeit? When you look at anxiety, can you spot the fact that it's telling you if you just control your environment, then you'll feel safe? And that's actually a counterfeit of like, no, you can feel safe because the God of the universe has adopted you into his family and has promised to take care of you. That's better. With insecurity, sort of the lie is that joy comes from being accepted by other people. But that's a counterfeit of the fact that true joy comes from knowing you are accepted by God and being able to freely offer your identity in him to other people and not have to worry quite as much whether they'll accept you or reject you in that. Materialism, joy comes from gaining stuff. And yet, why are some of the happiest people the people who are the most generous? The number one way to fight infection from spreading through your life is to live in the love of your Father in heaven, who has created you on purpose for a purpose. So that's the first one. The first one is we remain in the joy of our identity. The second thing is this, that we refuse to hide our struggle. See, to me, this is where the story of David really kind of takes a turn. What David did up front was bad. He slept with another guy's wife. I think we're all hopefully on the same page. Not okay behavior. The fact that he's a king and a king that claims to represent ruling in a way that represents the rule of God. Yeah, for all of those reasons, so not okay. An abuse of power, a manipulation, yeah, terrible, all of that. There's a moment in that story, though, where David could come clean. There's a moment in that story where David could admit to what he's done. And I mean, honestly, if you look at it from David's perspective, he's the king. He's probably going to be able to get away with it. And yet, David, in that moment, chooses to bury and hide and try to cover up what he's done. And so he brings Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, home from the war. And he tries to then convince her of, like, go home and have your wife wash your feet, which is the weirdest euphemism I've ever heard for sex. But that's totally what that means. And so he's like, but think about how terrible that is. I mean, he's trying to get Uriah to go home to convince him that that's going to be his child. That's dark. Because when David decided to rather own up to the spiritual infection that's now growing inside of him, he instead tries to put a lid on it. He shoves it down. He pushes it away. He can't deal with the reality of what he's done. He's not willing to have to face other people seeing what he's done. And so he tries to work it out that way. Uriah won't do it. And so in this story, the amount of character Uriah's story, I mean, like, David is just turning into the worst human being in this story. This guy won't even go to be with his wife out of loyalty to his fellow troops who are out fighting the war. And while that's happening, David is trying to figure out how to pawn this pregnancy off onto someone else. Uriah won't do it. So David sends him back with instructions for his own death. He has him killed. Do you see the growth of the spiritual infection in David's life happening here? This is what happens when we choose to hide our struggles. I mean, we do this all the time, right? We've done something and we're ashamed and we're embarrassed of it. There's that area of our life that's weak, that's sabotaging us. And we do that thing and we're like so embarrassed of like anyone else to know. No one else can know that that's a problem in my life. No one else can know that's an addiction in my life. No one can know that I'm struggling with that. And so we try to hide it and push it down. And yet that's where things grow. That's where spiritual infections grow the most is when they're hidden. Let's go back to that friend of mine who had that affair with the worship leader. What would have happened if the moment that he had that moment where he knew his heart's affections turned toward her, he went to a trusted friend of his and said, hey, just so you know, this just happened. I know there's like a thing inside of me that like went in a bad direction. I need your accountability in my life for that. What if he had had the courage to do that? How many people wouldn't have gotten hurt if he had had the courage to do that in that moment? And it's so easy to look at him and his story and for me to sort of judge him. And yet in my own life, I do the same thing all the time. I hide because I'm ashamed. I hide because I want to look the part. You know how easy it is to want to do that when you're like the pastor guy? Like you're up here on this stage and it's like there's something about being up here that just, I know a lot, of, like I'm sure a lot of you don't, but there are some of you out there tonight that are like, he's the pastor. And like I see it when I'm talking to you. There's like, you know, don't curse or whatever it is. Like, and there's this idea of like, oh, the pastors are like the holy people. We are not. We are broken, flawed, messed up people. But there's this part of me that wants that. There's this part of me that likes the image of that. And so that's part of the reason, like sometimes people come up to me and talk about how much they appreciate like whatever authenticity that I sort of, it's survival, guys. Like if I start buying into a certain image, if I start buying into hype about myself, I'm done. Because there is a spiritual infection inside of me, and if I am not ruthless with coming out of hiding and sharing it with people around me that I can trust, it is going to wreck major areas of my life. And that sounds really negative, but I want to focus on the positive of that, is that you don't have to hide. As a matter of fact, let's try something here. And I'm not going to make anyone share, so just so you know, I won't make you do that. How many of you here tonight, as I've been talking, there's an area of your life that you can identify as like a spiritual infection point? It can be big, it can be small, whatever, but you're like identifying on some level with this. Raise your hand. Okay, keep them up. Keep them up. Keep them up. Everyone look around while the people's hands are raised. See? Look, we are, okay, you can put them down now. We're all screwed up together. Like, we all have it, guys. Like, we're all broken. We're all messed up. We're all struggling with this. Like, that's the biggest reason that we stay in hiding, is because we think, if people saw me then. But the truth is this. We all have those areas of our life that we're ashamed of, those areas that are broken, the area where there's a spiritual infection that could spread. This is why we have life groups. We have life groups. The reason we talk about them all the time is because this isn't a place where if the person you're sitting next to is a stranger, you're probably not going to lean over to them at the end of this talk and be like, "You want to hear my deepest sin?" And if that's your instinct, don't do it. But like, that's why we have life groups, is because we create safe spaces where you're seeing the same people week after week after week and giving the honest, more and most honest version of what's going on in your life. Over time, you learn, these other people are going through it with me. And if your life group's not that, it's because everyone's afraid to be the first person to go, which means you might need to be the person to lead the way on that. The greatest defense against spiritual infection is admitting that it's there in the first place. If Fusion's going to be a place of healing, like if someone is going to come here who's never heard the message of Jesus, who's got a lot of crap in their life and is feeling really broken and messed up, the only way they're going to feel accepted here is if we're willing to admit that we are too. So we ruthlessly refuse to hide. We invite other people into our struggle. It won't be easy. It will be scary, but it's also going to be healing. So the first thing, we remain in the joy of our identity. The second thing, we refuse to hide our struggle. The last thing is this. We regularly repent to God and ask for healing. And this is probably where I'm at tonight. As Jacob was up here, and again, to try to like deconstruct the potential pastor image thing, like as Jacob was up here leading us in worship, I was singing them, but I fought really connecting with God for the first couple of songs, because like I knew there's some stuff I just didn't want to talk to him about. And so I was just sort of like going through the motions, right? And then about somewhere around that third song, I just started getting leveled. And having to have some conversations with God about some stuff in my life and being like, I know, I see it. I know this is not what you want for me. I need you to bring healing into my life. We didn't read this part of David's story, but this is the one redeeming part of David's story is this. See, David thinks he's gotten away with it. He thinks he's covered it up. And then this prophet named Nathan shows up, and he's like, hey, there's this guy. They're like, let me tell you about the story that just happened. It's crazy. There's this rich guy who had, like, tons of sheep. Then there's this one dude who had, like, a little lamb and named him, like, Fred. And Fred was his best friend, and they, like, grew up together. And it was, like, this really, like, fox and the hound special kind of moment of bonding. And it's like the rich guy had some friends over, and rather than killing one of his sheep, he went and got Fred and killed Fred. And David gets upset. I mean, he loses it, and he's just going nuts. He's like, this guy's got to die. He's like, okay, maybe that's too much. But like, this guy's got to like pay back tenfold everything he's done. Just gets indignant and self-righteous and just turning red, frothing at the mouth. And Nathan's like, yeah, you're the guy. And that's what happens with us, right? Like, we get really indignant and self-righteous and we get on our soapboxes about how like, you know, I'm right. But the truth is that there's just this brokenness inside of us. Like, there's nothing that's more, like, if there's someone who's like being overly aggressive, there's like, it's basically guaranteed there's something in their life that's broken that they're guilty about, that they're ashamed of, that they're running from. And so what we have to do is we have to sort of lay down our pride in those moments and hear. And the message tonight for some of you is like, yeah, the first message for some of you tonight is, yeah, you need to repent. Like, you're doing some stuff that's not okay, and it's a counterfeit. It's a spiritual infection. It's not God's best for you, and it breaks his heart because he wants his absolute best for you. And for some of you tonight, you just need to confess tonight and say, yep, God, I see it, and I need healing in my life. For some of you, it's been an addiction. It's been a struggle for a long time. It's been something you just can't see your way out of. And there's a lot of different factors that might need to come into play, especially all three of the things we talked about tonight coming into play to deal with that addiction. But I want to let you know this, is that God, first and foremost, just wants you to come before him and be like, I need help. And so that's what David does. When Nathan confronts him with his sin, he has this broken down moment. And you can read it in the chapter of the story. I'll let you read it on your own. But there's this psalm that David writes, and one of the lines from it is like, God, against you and you only have I sinned. Restore to me the joy of my salvation. And the good news that David was leaning on was that he was repenting to a God who is kind and merciful. How much more do we now know him to be kind and merciful because of Jesus? If you're here tonight and you're checking out this whole Christianity thing, you're figuring it out, I mean, the message of Jesus is central to who we are and what we're about. The message of Jesus is that God cared about our spiritual brokenness so deeply, so much, that he died on a cross to absorb that spiritual infection, then rose from the dead to conquer its power, including its greatest power, which is the hopelessness of death. And so tonight, for those of us who are followers of Jesus, as we come to God and repent, we're coming to a God who has already, for those of us who are followers of Jesus, who has already forgiven us for everything we have, are doing, and will do. And so it's just ours to confess it and to accept a forgiveness that's already there. And then to ask for the power of God's resurrection to be made known in our life. Is God, will the same power that raised Jesus from the dead be at work in changing me? And we circle back around and we fight to stay in the joy of our identity. And when we mess up, we don't hide. We bring other people into it. And as we're doing that, we turn to Jesus and say, Jesus, would you heal me? Would you make me new? Thank you for your forgiveness that never runs out, that I can never get rid of, that I can never shake. And as we do that over and over and over again, what we find is that the spiritual infection shrinks and shrinks. And we're able to live the fully alive life that God called us to. So tonight, I'm going to invite us into a time of prayer. And I just want to create space for you to repent. And if you don't know what that word means, repent's just to turn away from, to go the opposite direction of. And so for you just to have a conversation with God where you hold up that thing in your life and be like, God, I get it. I don't want the counterfeit. I want your best. I don't want the infection. I want healing. Just ask him for that. And do that quietly on your own here for a few seconds. For some of you tonight, even though I know I already kind of talked about this, but the idea that God has forgiven you, there's just so much shame and you're convinced he's so disappointed in you. And for some of you tonight, you just need to accept that forgiveness of like, that everything you have done was covered on the cross. You bear it no more. And just accept, have a conversation with God where you just accept his forgiveness. For some of you tonight, you need to say, God, restore the joy of being who you've created me to be. Help me to live a fully alive life so that temptation doesn't have as much influence over me. And lastly, maybe some of you just need to pray, God, would you give me the courage to share this with someone and bring the right person in my life that I can tell about what I'm really going through? God, great is your faithfulness. Great is your faithfulness, O God, our Father. There's no shadow of turning that comes from you. And then all that we've needed, you've provided. You're faithful. Thank you for your faithfulness to us. God, thank you for your faithfulness to me. I don't get it. I am overwhelmed by how quickly you are to forgive, how you despite several good reasons to, have refused to love me any less. And just, you've never wavered in your acceptance and your love of me. And it's that kindness that draws me to repentance. Continue to heal spiritual infections in my life, God. Give me courage to be ruthless with them, with not hiding. And I pray that for our community as well. Would we be a community, God? Would you tonight in people's lives be producing healing and freedom?